Good morning.
Good morning.
There's a trick to it, Dan. It took me a long time to learn the fans. But I think you have to turn it just a little ways. It may be all psychological, but having the overhead fans on makes me think I'm cool. Works for me. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society, a place where you are welcome no matter where you are on your religious journey, no matter your economic status in life, no matter your gender, your sexual preference, you are welcome here. At least we strive to make you feel welcome. If this is one of your first times here, there will be a time later on in the service when we will ask you to introduce yourselves. It's not required. We don't want to scare you off. We do ask that if it's one of your first times, you consider coming here more than once because our services vary from Sunday to Sunday. Sometimes I do the service. I am Prairie's consulting minister, Sandy Ingham. Sometimes people from within the congregation do the service, and sometimes people outside of our group do the service. I have an announcement. Next week, the 27th, we will have our traditional annual combined service with the Free Congregation of Sauk County. Occasionally I slip and call it Sauk City, and they remind me gently, no, it's Sauk County. However, their building is located in Sauk City. Now, I think it's still a tradition, even though we skipped it last year. I would like to possibly have a rough estimate of how many are going. So far I know there are about 10 of us. How many of you think you might be going? Oh, that's fantastic. Wait a minute until I count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's great. Thank you. Because they want to know how much coffee and hot water. Because remember, there's a potluck picnic afterwards. That means we are supposed to bring a dish to pass. And please bring your own beverage if you want something other than coffee or tea or water. And they will provide all the tableware and everything. So, for those of you who can't go or just don't want to make that trip, although I do urge you to go if you possibly can, there will be something happening here. It will be actually a very special something happening here. I don't have any more announcements. It must be July. We're taking time to breathe. These then are the opening words, written by Mary Oliver in her poem titled, Three Things to Remember. As long as you're dancing, you can break the rules. Sometimes breaking the rules is just extending the rules. Sometimes there are no rules. Dan, would you light the chalice, please? We light this chalice to illuminate the dance we do together. Let the light shine on our dance, and let our dance be one of hope and dreams of freedom for all, freedom from fear, freedom from oppression, freedom from stereotypes, freedom from prejudices and assumptions. This may be a virtual chalice, but you're getting the idea. It's okay. See, this is one of those things that I think magically happen. Somebody puts oil in there. Somebody puts the wick in. Oh-hoo! Let it be a dance we do. A dance lit, finally, by our flaming chalice. The reading that I would like to share with you this morning is by the Reverend Jane Zepka, Unitarian Universalist minister in New England. Her mother happens to live in Madison. This is titled, When Feet Flail. She writes, I read copies of old church minutes in our kitchen. If I put my mind to it, I can stand there and get through an entire annual report while waiting for whatever it is to boil. My observation thus far is this. We look on the sunny side. In the entire history of our church, according to these reports, we have never had a murky dilemma, been a little short of cash, or even stumbled upon an intriguing situation, except twice. In 1935, the report mentions our organ music, which was lovely, despite the fact that the organist had lost more than one finger during his day-to-day activities as a local electrician. Whoa! Right, Zepka, I have a finger that doesn't work too well, and I'm filled with admiration for an organist who can play a few fingers short. But I'm not easily fooled. Somebody must have been concerned for the man, if not for the music. No problems appear as such, though, until 1980, when the Pew Stabilization Committee appeared. Seems the pews kept tipping over backwards. I had frankly always wondered, I remember this would be your typical New England church where the churches look like churches, whether they're Unitarian Universalists or not, so you know what pews look like. Since the pews kept tipping over backwards, Zepka says, I had frankly always wondered why the congregation seemed so alert Sunday after Sunday. I was on the verge of thinking it had something to do with the minister's preaching capacities. But it's all clear now. They were sitting in a pew, got kind of comfy, sleepy too, their heads tilted back, mouths opened, they drifted off and, oops, the whole pewful went over, feet flailing in the breeze. Wouldn't it be nice to imagine that missed notes and pew stabilization have been our greatest challenges? I feel sure, though, that we've endured tougher times, mercifully left unrecorded. One has to conclude that when the sun stopped shining, the organ stirred our singing nonetheless, and most feet stayed firmly on the ground. But that's what sustains me. I overheard the owner of the cabins where I was staying outside of Voyageurs National Park in northern Minnesota say to someone on the phone. Her remark caught my attention. She didn't say, "But that's what keeps me going." She said, "That's what sustains me." I knew her well enough to ask her what that was all about. It was about how she managed to keep going through the long northern Minnesota winters by getting away. But next winter, as she was making the plans for next winter, her husband had said he did not want to go anywhere, thus triggering her almost panicked reaction as she wondered, how could she possibly carry on without the annual getting away? The solution? Go away. Go anyway. Go alone if need be. Sustain and sustainability are strong words. They go to the very heart of how we live and why we do what we do. They are directly related to that often quoted Woody Allen saying, and I don't have it ever correctly, I'm not sure how he originally said it, but something like this, 80% of the secret of life is showing up. You can't show up until you get out of bed, and you can't get out of bed if nothing sustains you. There can be many reasons not to get out of bed, especially in the winter. How do we do it? Even in the dark, dreary times, what sustains us enough to compel us to show up? sustain, to give support to cause to continue, to cause to continue to keep up, especially without interruption, diminution, or flagging, to support the weight of, to hold up, to support the weight of. What supports the weight of my life? What sustains you? And is it true or false sustainability? Is it real or not so real? And what do I mean by that? The need for sustainability in our lives is universal, a deep human longing for connection. To me, a self-described humanist, this yearning is a spiritual longing, if I dare use the word, a sacred desire for meaning. I believe this is true for all of us, whether we would describe ourselves as humanists or atheists or theists or agnostics or Jewish or Christian or Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, pagan, mystic, pantheist. I lost everything over the last 5 to 6 years, or so it seemed to me. It felt as if all was lost. My job, my remaining parent, 5 of my dearest, closest friends. 5 of them not here anymore. My sustainers, my support system. Losses that I expected intellectually to eventually encounter as the years went by, but never did I think that I would lose all of them in such a short period of time. Okay, that's the version of my life that plays in my head when I'm having a bad day. Or it's the middle of an unending, ridiculously cold winter. Or I'm feeling especially sorry for myself for any number of reasons. Poor me, I'm going to eat some worms, as the kids used to say, or at least organize a pity party. While it is true that I have lost all of that over the past few years, saying that I have lost everything is way too dramatic, not to mention unfair to those who really have lost everything. I have struggled to figure out, perhaps to rediscover, what sustains me. In this struggle, I have learned what Mary Oliver put in words: as long as you're dancing, you can break the rules. Sometimes breaking the rules is just extending the rules, and sometimes there are no rules. I have learned the difference, or maybe I'm beginning to be more aware of the difference, between what truly sustains me for the long haul and what only does so temporarily. Because sometimes the wrong things sustain us, wrong in the sense that they are not sustainable in and of themselves over the long haul. That is, not strong enough to help us in the really tough times. It turns out these things have little or no staying power in the bigger picture. And the list of examples is long. Alcohol, drugs, food, too much of it, I realize we need some. Some relationships, the toxic ones. Some books and movies and plays and music and performances. Sports. I love sports. And being active does sustain me right now in my life. But what if I were unable to be this active? How sustaining would sports be to me then? We have to be discerning about what we choose to sustain us. And I think that there is an analogy here with our response to global warming. We think that We are helping to heal the planet by not driving so much, or by using different light bulbs, or even by remembering to take our own bags to the grocery store. It's not that we aren't helping the environment by these actions. It is just that what really has to happen for us to change is our whole way of thinking about energy. We have to demand that humanity figure out a way not to use fossil fuels. And thank you for the work you're doing, you and everyone else in here. We need to have an uprising. We need to go out on the streets and protest. We could solve this problem. Humor and laughter sustain me, truly sustain me, the way my sister turned me into a baseball hero, complete with pictures. The image of feet flailing as parishioners tip over in church pews. Good comedy found in movies and in plays. My son and I go to American Players Theater every summer, and we've been doing this almost since the beginning of APT. This season, we purposely chose only comedies. We suspect this had something to do with the long winter we had just survived. Tuesday, we're going to see something we've seen before, The Importance of Being Earnest. I expect to laugh until it hurts. To be sustained in this life, I need to laugh a lot. After all, life is absurd. Laughter allows us to recognize that part of the puzzle known as the so-called human condition, while refusing to be bullied by that condition. I know, too, that I need to hear more stories about other people and what sustains them. Operative word being stories. Telling our stories is the common denominator here this morning, crucial to sustainability. I would argue that it's the common denominator for any congregation, any good organization. The dance that we do together on this journey is all about our stories. When I was at Star King School for the Ministry, I took a semester-long class on storytelling through the Graduate Theological Union. We were able to make use of, there were 9 different schools there of all different denominations and faith traditions. I had completely forgotten about this class until I started thinking about what sustains me. I don't remember much of anything about the content of the class. It was Christian-based, possibly even Lutheran. Maybe that's why I haven't retained more of the content. I took that class when I still thought that it was intellectually clever and hip of me to reject all of Christianity, to ignore it. What I do retain from the class is a belief in the importance of storytelling. Storytelling isn't just something we do for and with kids. When done well, telling a story is not a light and fluffy event. It is the essence of what makes us human. It is the means by which we can begin to understand the other, capital O. And we all have an other that we are biased about. It is the vehicle, storytelling is the vehicle, that if we are wise enough to do so, we hop on it to get through the hard nights and the dark times. Here is a very short story about one of my sustainers, nature, which is a true, for me anyway, sustainer. This is titled, the title's as long as the story, I think, The Fox and I Meet at Midnight. Not very many nights ago, I was awakened by a strange noise that sounded a bit like a dog barking. And so I went to the window and I looked down and down, I live on the second floor, and down there was a very big fox. And Fox and I made eye contact. I know we did. And Fox felt better, I think, after the eye contact, because Fox was sad or upset about something. I also live near Quarry Park, kind of across the street, so Fox may live there. Perhaps Fox had lost, I don't know, its mate or some children. Here is Mary Oliver's poem, which is a story, of course, about her encounter with Fox, titled Goodbye, Fox. He was lying under a tree, licking up the shade. Hello again, Fox, I said. And hello to you, too, said Fox, looking up and not bounding away. You're not running away, I said. Well, I've heard of your conversation about us. News travels even among foxes, as you might know or not know. What conversation do you mean? Some lady said to you, the hunt is good for the fox. And you said, which fox? Yes, I remember, she was huffed. So you're okay in my book. Your book? That was in my book. That's the difference between us. Yes, said Fox, I agree. You fuss over life with your clever words, mulling and chewing on its meaning, while we just live it. Oh, could anyone figure it out to a finality? So why spend so much time trying? You fuss, we live. And he stood slowly, for he was old now, and ambled away. We fuss. Animals have mastered the art of living, of being. We fuss some more. Animals live. Just live. Our Buddhist friends remind us to be here now. People sustain me to a certain extent. You have to be careful, though, with this kind of sustainability, because people are as capable of unsustaining you as they are of sustaining you. Who hasn't had someone whip that rug of sustainability right out from under them through betrayal, lies, abandonment? What's that old song? You always hurt the one you love, the one you shouldn't hurt at all. But certainly, each and every one of you sustains me, especially as a collective entity. Knowing Prairie exists, knowing there is a congregation of free thinkers right up the road in Sauk County, knowing that the Unitarian Universalist Association is alive and well, relatively, and that so many Unitarian Universalists manage to come together for our annual General Assembly, all of this sustains me. I am sustained not necessarily by individual people, though, which I used to think I was, before I lost so many people in my life. What sustained me when they went away? Of course, the memories are still there, and memories can be useful tools to have in our sustainability toolbox. But I want something deeper, something with more complexity. Consider how people can sustain us in a couple of other contexts. One is through their stories, especially the stories of those who have gone before us and persevered through all sorts of obstacles and managed to fight against oppression, ignorance, ugliness, and have sometimes been killed for this perseverance. We have so many martyrs from our Unitarian and Universalist histories. Norbert Chopek, Jan Hus, James Reeb, countless unnamed women in the 1400s and 1500s, and so many, many others from other faith traditions, and some from not any particular faith tradition. Leonard Pitts, how many of you know that name? Leonard Pitts, a columnist, one of my favorite existing columnists, or still writing, I should say, a columnist for the Miami Herald, recently wrote a column about John Siegenthaler. You probably won't know that name. I did not know that name. Siegenthaler died a couple of weeks ago. He was Robert Kennedy's emissary to the South during the Freedom Rides. He was an outspoken reporter and an editor for the Tennessean newspaper in Nashville, his hometown. He was outspoken about racial inequality when this was a dangerous thing for a white man to do. And he was beaten up more than once for this. As Pitts put it, he, Siegenthaler, somehow was able to make himself see what people around him could not. Of his growing up years, privileged white and segregated South, Siegenthaler said, "We were blind to the reality of racism and afraid, I guess, of change." As Pitts says, Siegenthaler's legacy is one of hope because his life shows us that we have a choice to take off the blinders and see reality and then do something about injustice, ugliness, oppression, global warming. Stories about those who did what was right when most everyone else was going along with the crowd sustain me. How many of you know Joan Didion's story, The Year of Magical Thinking, which I did see at APT last week? I won't spoil anything because she said this is right up front, right at the beginning. She loses both. Well, I'll spoil if I say that. She has a daughter in intensive care, and she and her husband go home from visiting the daughter, and they're having dinner. Husband, also a well-known person, John Dunn.
Dunn,
thank you. She says something to him, and she's not looking at him. They're at the dinner table, and he doesn't respond, and she thinks he's being cute or something, and she looks over, and his face was in his plate, or he'd fallen off the chair, I think. He was dead. How do people survive things like this? What sustains them? How do they get beyond this? Perhaps it has something to do with the amazing generosity of people. Consider this story from another Leonard Pitts column titled, "The Immense Power of People." Do you know about the PCNAF? That would be the Peace Corps Nigeria Alumni Foundation. It's about this big. It exists for only one purpose, to provide scholarships for Nigerian girls. Pitts wrote about this foundation and sent a small contribution to it, thinking maybe a few of his readers would do the same. As he puts it, "I was wrong. It wasn't a few of you. It was a whole bunch of you." And as of mid-June, $35,000 had been raised, overwhelming this tiny group's treasurer. But the president of the foundation assures us that that's okay. They are quite fine with this kind of overwhelmingness. They are hoping to be able to use some of this money for the kidnapped girls, should any more of them be released or get away. I remind you again of the title of that column, "The Immense Power of People." And I'm going to put in my August newsletter column where you might send some money. You don't have to send much. If we all sent 10 bucks, we'd educate a lot of Nigerian girls. We need one another. We need one another when we are in trouble and afraid. When I am frightened, will you reassure me? When I'm uncertain, will you hold my hand? Will you be strong for me? Sing to me quietly. Will you share some of your stories with me? And then I guess I'd have to say one more thing about what sustains me. In fact, it's so obvious that you think I have to hit myself upside the head and say, duh. And remember, I say this as a humanist. Religion sustains me. Well, it must. It must be a primary source of sustainability in my life because I keep coming back to it, don't I? And at this point, I was going to define religion for you, as found in my Webster's Third International Dictionary, but I was not happy with most of the definitions. I had to go to 3B to get to this one, the body of institutionalized expressions of sacred beliefs, observances, and social practices found within a given cultural context. I thought maybe the atheist could live with that one. But then there was another one clear at the bottom of this very large list that came as close to a good definition as possible for me. A cause, principle, system of tenets held with ardor, devotion, conscientiousness, and faith, a value held to be of supreme importance. As in, you know how some older dictionaries, no, I didn't do this online, give a little example. A value held to be of supreme importance, as in this phrase, By making democracy our religion and by practicing it well and preaching its doctrines. Okay, I think I can live with that. And interestingly, if you look up religious, as opposed to religion, you don't get into God until several definitions down. The first one is relating to that which is acknowledged as ultimate reality. Now, who can't? Who can't live with that definition? Relating to that which is acknowledged as ultimate reality or of ultimate importance, which reminds me of someone named James Luther Adams, and we'll do a whole service on James Luther Adams some Sunday, or two Sundays, or a month. Very complicated man. And maybe faith is a better word, as in faith traditions sustain me, and I don't want to go into language anymore right now, but I am going to be exploring language in a few weeks. When I lost my ministerial position in Green Bay during the Great Recession and was packing up my apartment in preparation for leaving Green Bay, I wondered if I would ever be a minister again. I was wondering this because there were so many decisions to be made about what books and papers to keep. And yet, here I am. The wisdom found in the world's religions or faith traditions sustains me, because all of those traditions, plus the beliefs of atheists, yes, they have beliefs, and agnostics and humanists, make up the dance that we do together. All of these traditions, all of this searching for what it means to be human on this planet, all of this wisdom is a valuable resource in my quest to answer that persistent, nagging question. When everything is lost, then what? Then what do we do? When everything is lost, it seems, or seems to be, I listen for the stories from both within and outside of the world's faith traditions so I can make connections again with this world. Being sustained by the wisdom of the world means being stubborn enough to get back up again and again and again and again after being knocked down. It means acceptance and being called to be here now, as I said, the Buddhists keep urging us to do this. But in doing all of this, sometimes I will be Buddhist. Sometimes I will be an atheist. Sometimes an agnostic. Sometimes, especially when working for peace, my own and the world's, I will strive to be a follower of Jesus, though not of Christ. Sometimes I will be Jewish or Hindu, perhaps even Muslim eventually when I know more about Islam. I will be pagan, I will be a Buddhist, a Native American, and a mystic, and I will always be a heretic. Remember, that means to choose to be a dissenter. And I will always be a free thinker. Let it be a dance we do. May I have this dance with you? Tell me your story, and I will tell you mine. I have decided, writes Mary Oliver in the poem of the same name, I have decided to find myself a home in the mountains, somewhere high up, where one learns to live peacefully in the cold and the silence. It's said that in such a place certain revelations may be discovered, that what the spirit reaches for may be eventually felt, if not exactly understood. Slowly, no doubt. I'm not talking about a vacation. Of course, at the same time, I mean to stay exactly where I am. Are you following me? And of course, I have to close with this from Mary Oliver. I go down to the shore in the morning, and depending on the hour, the waves are rolling in or moving out. And I say, oh, I am miserable. What should I do? And the sea says, in its lovely voice, excuse me, I have work to do. So greet your neighbor and go do your work.